Mays, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Finnegan, and David Janes here with you. A lot to discuss when it comes to the Tennessee Titans. And no better person to help us right off the hop than Paul Gaharsky of Paul Gaharsky. com. Paul, we will of course get to the news of the day that Brian Callahan has ceded play calling responsibilities to quarterbacks coach Bo Hardegree, but I actually want to get your thoughts on something that broke roughly 15 minutes before we came on the air. The Tennessee Titans have traded Jarvis Brownlee and a 2026 seventh round pick in exchange for the New York Jets' 2026 sixth round pick. Your thoughts on this deal, and is this the first domino to fall in a fire sale for the Titans?
Well, it doesn't seem like a fiery sale move because the second-year guy. So in that regard, it's weird. And the return's not terrific because they spent a fifth on him, and they're giving up a seventh. They're getting back a sixth. So it's a little peculiar. But I think you know, they were disgusted by the penalties in the first game. I think his public response to it was like, I'm not really going to change a lot. And Denard Wilson was not pleased. Said it's unacceptable. Now, he was cleaner, but this is the kind of style player that he is. And I think they must have concluded that he's not going to adapt sufficiently to what they want him to do. And decided that maybe it's not sending a good message to the rest of the DBs and the rest of the team, really. Maybe there was an incident, I don't know. But the timing's peculiar and fast. To start a fire sale with a second-year guy as opposed to, you know, one of the older guys who would bring more value, it's kind of weird, though. He's awfully cheap contractual-wise, so the Jets aren't inheriting much there. And some of the costlier guys, you know, a team's more likely to trade for later when they don't have to take on as much contractually.
Paul, Brian Callahan said he had zero disappointment, quote unquote, in his play calling, but still handed those responsibilities over to Bo Hardegree. Callahan took ownership of this decision. He was asked about Mike Borgonzi's and Chad Brinker's involvement in this decision. He seemed to downplay that. How much influence do you believe Borgonzi and Brinker had in the decision for Brian Callahan to no longer be calling plays?
Yeah, I think probably pretty significant. I mean, if he had zero disappointment in his play calling, well, I mean, what are the odds he's going to have zero disappointment in somebody else, Ben? The other guys would have to meet this high standard he set that the rest of us don't necessarily see. I mean, I think he calls plays that get people open. I don't think he calls them in great sequence or with great feel. So maybe Hardegree will be able to better do that with Brian Callahan's plays. I mean, they're all in the room that designed the plays during the offseason and adjusted the playbook, and they're all involved in putting together the game plan every Tuesday. But, I mean, he just keeps saying at least one thing that kind of works to offset whatever he's saying that's good. So you could say I'm not disappointed in my play calling, but certainly hasn't gotten us the results that we're looking for. I mean, maybe that's inherent, or he thinks that's inherent in what he's saying, but I don't know why that's a necessary add there, and it makes me feel like he was nudged to do it. But whether he's nudged to do it or not, I think you're looking for some level of shakeup. This isn't the level of shakeup the fan base is looking for, but it's something. They're going against a team that's been equally bad. Unfortunately, the worst thing about the Texans is their offensive line. And I think the defensive play caller doesn't have much to work with there in terms of attacking a bad offensive line. So we'll see. I would expect a better offensive performance. Everybody, whenever a change like this is made, the unit generally plays better. You know, once an interim head coach, the team usually plays better in the first game for that guy. So I would expect a boost for a week at least.
Now, his next step, I believe, is out the door if this thing doesn't get turned around, not even from a schematic standpoint, but just the management of the team. If it doesn't get better, I think his next step is out. And that's unfortunate considering the roster that he has. But, Paul, do you think the choice to go with Bo Hardegree as opposed to Nick Holtz was because Bo had experience calling plays there with the Raiders? And even though they've been together for a while, he and Nick hasn't had any experience at ever calling plays, not to my knowledge.
No, he called plays, I think, for a year at UNLV when he was there, but it's not the same. Hardegree had a pretty good 9-game run with the Raiders, and I think he's closer with Cam, you know. And if you've listened to Cam talk, we were talking about it in the press room today. Cam mentions Hardegree and Callahan much more than he mentions Holtz. So, you know, I don't know if we're reading too much into that, but certainly it seems like he was bypassed. And McCoy was bypassed. McCoy, you know, called plays for 4 years and three different stints as an offensive coordinator. He didn't call plays during his 3 years as head coach in San Diego when he had guys like Frank Reich and Ken Wisenhunt, actually, as his offensive coordinator calling plays. It did make a little bit of sense what Callahan said about not going to McCoy, because McCoy hasn't been here very long, and Hardegree has been here for the whole thing. So there's a little bit more continuity in moving to him. I agree with you, the next step's out the door. I wrote, you know, last night and this morning that it just puts them at such odds with their pledge to be patient. You know, I mean, if Callahan keeps being the story of games with his gaffes, well, then that overrules patience. But if he can get himself out of these scenarios by not being the play caller, where he's not making these gaffes with two timeouts and a delay a game before a go or kick a field goal kind of scenarios, maybe things settle down and they can be a little bit more patient. But, you know, I think people are far more anxious to see him fired than they are to see the Titans stick to their pledge of patience. But the stability thing is a big issue.
Now, not only are they not doing what they need to do on the field, coaches included, it just seems like the communication is off with the coaches and the players, or upper management and the players. Before Tavondre Sweat gets put on IR, Tavondre Sweat says, "I'm playing." And then 2 days later, he's on IR for 4 weeks. There's too much of that stuff going on in this organization.
I don't disagree with you, but I think on that one, Tavondre Sweat said, "I'm playing on Wednesday," and then I think he re-injured the ankle on Thursday. So I think on that one, it was just a matter of when we talked to him and when he hurt himself. But then it was weird that Callahan wouldn't offer that up on Friday like he usually does. I guess, you know, they could have bought themselves an extra day with Indianapolis, expecting to see Sweat, or 2 days with Indianapolis expecting to see Sweat. I always think that kind of stuff is overrated, but I understand it's part of NFL gamesmanship. And so, you know, whatever. I mean, I do think the players here, because people are so pissed at Callahan, mm-hmm. are getting off a little bit easily. I mean, Calvin Ridley struggled. Don't have a lot to do with Callahan.
He's awful. And he's been awful.
And you've got a much better perspective on what goes into what he's doing. All these penalties, you know, as much as they had a theme about it, I think some guys are overmatched and feel they have no choice but to commit penalties in certain situations where they're asked to rely on their technique and they're incapable of doing so. And these missed tackles, I mean, Denard Wilson called out the safeties today, said they're the last line of defense, they need to make plays. I think the safety group's one of the best groups on the team, and they played like trash. Yes. You know, when you're one of your best position groups is flailing and can't tackle Jonathan Taylor, and your whole thing is we've got bigger edges and we're not going to get run against, and you're getting run against, I mean, those are some inherent problems with your personnel that go hand in hand with the coaching issues that you're having.
Paul Karski is with us, paulkarski.com. And Paul, I listened to the press conference twice because my theory is
you poor guy.
The gaffes that you refer to, and in particular, the game operations part, the
failure to review in week one on the Io Manor catch, and then the debacle at the end of the half of the indecision of whether to kick the field goal or go for it. That, to me, is why they did this. That's my theory anyway, much more so than what plays are being called. I feel like, I've always felt like, I know it's a trend in the league that a lot of head coaches call the plays, but some people are just not cut out to do it. And to me, this was maybe what forced it, the embarrassment of the end of the half on Sunday.
Well, certainly. I mean, Brian Callahan's been the story in two out of three games, the two things you mentioned, plus the backed up in their own end at Denver before the half and passing the ball three times and leaving room for Denver to come back and score a touchdown was terrible. So he's got three scenarios there where he mismanaged. And he wasn't doing these things last year. So I think he's tightened up. I think he's shrinking in the moment. And maybe taking play calls away allows him to focus on those things. Or maybe he's not a guy that's tailor-made for those moments. I know what the overriding opinion of the fan base is. But I think they're going to take more of a look. And then, look, we're going to find out. Amy Adams Strunk has kind of sworn off of this stuff, right? She's given it to Brinker on the football side, and she's given it to Nihil on the non-football side. She's going to let him, Brinker and Borgonzi, make this decision if there's a decision to be made, or if things go terribly in Houston where she lives in Waller, just outside of that, and we know the contempt that they have for the Texans over the whole getting out of Houston thing, is she going to get emotional and pop in? Or if Vrabel comes here and kicks their ass, is she going to get emotional and invest in the whole thing? And do people want her to? Or do people want what they've said they want? And for her to stay out of football stuff.
But it clearly seems like every time that he's been asked about the play calling, he's like, no, I want to do it. So this clearly was not his idea to do it. I think he was maybe floated the idea in a previous time, and this time I don't think he was given a choice. But here to me, Paul, is another big part of this. With the Brinker infrastructure, if I'm Brian Callahan, I'm not happy. The buck stops with him. But I would be very disappointed in the people that he's put around him to assist. If you're going to be the play caller and be the guy who makes the big decisions, do we go for it, do we challenge? You've got to have great people around you that are picking up the slack when you have to multitask and call the next play. I think they have done a terrible job in preparing him as a young head coach, and part of it, I guess, is his fault because he's choosing the people who's putting around him. But the quote-unquote infrastructure they're putting.
I think so, too, and I think he's probably, Willie, got too many people in his ear. Like last year, he's probably got his dad, and he's probably got Colts, right? And now he's got those two, and he's got McCoy. He's got Fassel, who's got some, you know, real strength to him and is probably pushing – you know, or in his ear about the field goal. And he's got Hardegree, who was there last year too. But and then he's got Reederer, who's his analytics guy, who botched the advice on Io Manor's catch. So, I mean, if he's got five people chiming in, they probably needed two more timeouts for everybody to get that thing straight.
But so how the analytics guy, right? Let's go to Reederer because I'm fascinated with him because nobody really talks to him or hears from him. But wouldn't analytics 10 times out of 10 tell you to go for it 4th and 1 on the 39 when you're down 17-6?
I certainly think so, and I think he should be erring on the side of aggression all the time. I think aggression versus conservative has gotten him tied up too many times just through three games this season already. Err on the side of aggression. You're not a very good football team. You know, you're not on track. 4th and 1, you should be able to convert. Look, Tony Pollard is getting some tough yards. I'd like to see him get a damn explosive play and not have his high be 11 yards through three games. But, I mean, your offensive line's supposed to be rebuilt. The interior is pretty good. Even with Hants, it was pretty good against Buckner and Stewart. You know, hell, or show some creativity and boot Ward out of there. Do something, but you got to be able to get a yard in that
but
situation.
But the math, the emotion is one thing. The aggression, I agree with you 100% on that. But if you're doing analytics, it should be about math. And the math,
yeah,
to me,
math
it's overwhelming.
Yeah.
especially in today's football. This isn't 1975 where you punt when it's fourth and one. Nobody punts when it's fourth and one, especially when you're down 17-6. So I don't understand how they even get themselves into these pickles somehow, because that's
shooting
yourself.
Also, how many times are you going to send a guy on for a 60-plus yard field goal? I mean, you know, I know it's pretty I don't really like this whole thing where 60-yard field goals are semi-automatic now. I think it makes for kind of a boring football that there's no tension in those kicks. But the Titans found a way for there to be tension in two of them.
Okay, last one for you, Paul, because I know you have other duties today. And I guess your students were making sure that you were going to make it to the class. They thought they might have the afternoon off, it seemed like.
Oh, I'll be there. I was getting a key for something from somebody else. I don't know how this operation works where I get into this extra room I need to be in.
Okay, here's the question. How much better, given we know the personnel issues that they have, and I'm feeling for Cam Ward right now because it can't be easy to call plays with this group, especially with some of the injuries on top of everything else, but how much better can the scheme look with a different guy, regardless of who the guy is, a different guy calling plays?
Well, I think, you know, we talked about it. Like, I think Callahan has some good plays, and I think he gets guys open. I think the sequencing sometimes is awkward. I mean, 3 out of 4 of their first downs, they ran for a yard. That's not good execution by the run blocking or by Pollard, but it's also not the most creative starts to drives to get them into these favorable situations that they're looking for. And then, you know, I think there was a series in the third or fourth quarter where they were kind of moving fast and he threw pretty well. He was throwing for 8, for 12, for 14, and they got 3 or 4 first downs, and then all of a sudden they go away from what was working and they're all pretty quickly. So even when you feel like they're moving the ball well, they don't sustain it for the length of the field at a point in the game where it still feels like it matters. Cam's got to do a better job. He said this, getting to his second read. Blake Bedingfield wrote for me, he feels like he stays on the first read too long, and then he skips over second and third and goes to the check down. So he's got to get past that. And he's holding the ball too long and contributing to some of those sacks. So I think some of those corrections will help the offense overall. But then your number one receiver's got to catch the ball. You know, and there are a lot of other things that are going on that aren't helping Cam be as good as Cam, I think, could be at this stage.
Paul Kaharsky of PaulKaharsky.com has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. You can hear him tomorrow morning during the 8 o'clock hour on Robbie and Rex Road. Paul, thank you so much for your time. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, boys.
Paul Kaharsky on the program, 615-737-1025. By the way, during our chat with Paul, the Tennessee Titans have made it official. The Titans have traded cornerback Jarvis Brownlee Jr. to the New York Jets. As part of the move, the two teams will swap late-round picks in the 2026 draft. The Titans will get a 6th-round pick from the Jets, who will get Brownlee, and a 7th-round pick from the Titans. And, of course, the big news of the day, Brian Callahan ceding play calling responsibilities to quarterbacks coach Bo Hardegree. We want your reaction. 615-737-1025. We are flying by the seats of our pants today on a newsy day in Titans land. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.
You were hired largely because you were a play caller. Yep. So it seems like a self-demotion, if you will, or whatever. What's kind of your feeling at needing to give it up when it was a big part of the reason that you were the choice?
Yeah, again, it's a pretty easy thing to do when it comes to trying to help the football team win and do the best thing for, you know, what the job is. I got hired to be the head coach, you know, and part of that process was being involved on offense, but my job is to be the head coach of the football team, and I think that this allows me to do that job a little bit better, pay more attention to some things that might require my attention and be more present. So all those things are normal. I think it's all part of, you know, where we're at. We're 0-3, and so we're trying to get better. And I think that's my same message to the players as it is here right there at this podium.
That was Brian Callahan earlier today explaining the decision for him to hand over play calling duties to quarterbacks coach Bo Hardegree. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. We are live at Bridgestone Arena. Predators and Lightning in preseason action tonight. Also, our show is proudly presented by Bax Homeworks. Bax Homeworks transforms kitchens, bathrooms, and living spaces into places you can't wait to come home to. You can visit them online at baxhomeworks.com. Quickly, before we get to all of this news, happy birthday to us.
Absolutely.
Today is the one-year anniversary of D-Maze, Vingan, and Onik. Our debut program as a team with that title was 1 year ago today. So happy birthday to us. And Derek Mason brought cupcakes.
I brought cupcakes. Right. I got candles. So I'm going to do it up. If ain't nobody else going to do it up, I'm going to do it up for us.
I am happy to partake.
We got cupcakes. They from Publix. So
no free shouts, Derek.
No free shouts.
All right. There are so many different ways we can get into this. So let's start broadly and work our way into more complex conversations. Willie Donick, when you heard that this was happening, what was your initial reaction?
My initial reaction was that this was Chad Brinker and Mike Borgonzi not asking but telling. And I can't prove this. This is just me reading the signs, reading exactly what Brian Callahan said yesterday, saying that Bo Hardegree said the decision was made last night. So the same day that Brian Callahan said, I don't think there's a problem. I have no problem with the plays. The decision is made that same day that he's not going to be the play caller, and he comes out today with the story. So that cries that Brinker slash Borgonzi, whomever, maybe it came from the top, said we've got to do something. And with the gaffes that were clearly operational, when you look at the indecision, getting the wrong ball in, the non-challenge, lesser so the backed-up situation at the end of the first half against the Broncos, I think all of that pointed to this guy is not cut out to be a head coach and a play caller. I said it 2 weeks ago after the issues they had against the Broncos. That should never happen. It's mostly Callahan's doing of his own because he chooses the people around him, but it's also a product of if you're going to hire a coach to be the play caller and a first-time head coach who's never done it, you have to have a great infrastructure of people around him, and they clearly don't. And so Callahan is the guy that falls victim. But I don't think he was given a choice here. He can say, this was my decision. I want things to get better. But I think he was told it's this or it's beyond that.
Derek, before we get your response, I just want to read from the news release last year when the Tennessee Titans hired Brian Callahan. Here is part of the statement from Titans controlling owner Amy Adams-Strunk. Quote, Brian has a track record of success and a range of experience that has prepared him for this opportunity. His football knowledge and his enthusiasm for the game really stand out. And beyond that, we think his ability to lead will make him the ideal fit for our franchise. If you look at his history, Brian has been a part of a Super Bowl winning team and another team that advanced to the Super Bowl. He's worked in a variety of dynamic offenses with top flight quarterbacks. At each step of his career, he's shown the flexibility and intelligence to make an impact. During his time with the Bengals, he was trusted with a number of responsibilities, offensive design, quarterback development, a contributor to the free agency and draft processes, and showed the ability to be a resource in all of those areas. As we seek sustained success and pursue a championship, Brian has seen firsthand what that looks like, and he is the right person to lead us there, so on and so forth. But Derek, part of the reason, perhaps most of the reason, if not all of the reason, that the Tennessee Titans hired Brian Callahan is because of his offensive mind. They thought that Brian Callahan was ready to take the reins of an offense, and at the time they were partnering him with Will Levis, and they thought the two of them would be the next great quarterback head coach combo. We know how that turned out. The news today, Derek, truly feels like the Tennessee Titans have neutered Brian Callahan. If Brian Callahan is not calling plays, to borrow a line from one of my favorite films, Office Space, what would you say you do here? Because now that Brian Callahan isn't calling plays, I don't know what he does.
Well, he's going to be out of a job in a minute. No, seriously.
I know.
Because
I know.
Usually the way this thing works is when the team is this bad, you fire your offensive coordinator, then the head coach becomes the offensive coordinator, and it's like, okay, if I'm going to get fired, I'm going to do it my way, and we're going to go out the way I want to go out. Either I'm going to change it or we all getting fired. I'm not going to sit here and allow somebody else to, you know, have a big hand, especially when it comes to play calling, whether I'm here or not. It happened in the reverse. Now, I think they suggested, strongly suggested, that he give up play calling and to just manage the team. Because at this point, they just want to see if he's a head coach now. They just want to see if he can be the leader of 52 men, if he can be the leader in the other face, because the quarterback is the face, but he can be that other face and voice of a team. Can you be that? That's what we want to see now, because it's obvious now that you can't do both. And in their mind, they're like, you really can't do the play calling, you know? So let's see now if you can coach. This is the Titans showing patience. People, don't think if they do end up firing, which I hope things turn around and they don't, but don't think that if things don't change and they fire him in the middle, they didn't show patience. This is patience, because they could have fired him after all that nonsensical stuff he said after the game. They should have fired him then. If you wanted to fire a guy, that's them showing patience, saying, okay, we don't like what you said. We don't like what you've been doing on the field as a head coach. What we're going to do is show some patience here, because we hope this changes. You need to give up play calling, and you need to be the coach. Just be the coach. And then now we're evaluating you on being the coach. We're not evaluating you on calling plays any longer, because you have shown us you can't do that. You can't call plays and be a head coach. It's just you've shown us you can't do it. So we want to see now, with all of those things put aside, you're still going to overlook everything and you're still going to be a part of the meetings, but you need to pay attention to the team. Why do you think Mike Vrabel had so much success? Because he neither was the play caller on offense nor the play caller on defense. What happened when he became the play caller on defense? The defense was trash. I'm going to tell you that right now. They were not good. He was good at being a coach. That's what Vrabel was good at, being a coach. He just couldn't find people that could call plays. That was his demise. They want to see if Brian Callahan can be a coach now, because you've already shown us you cannot call plays.
Adam, you brought up some great points looking back at the press conference. Now, remember, nobody around the league, even the best, you've named the best reporters, nobody questioned the hire. People thought he was a up-and-coming, hot coaching candidate, and if the Titans didn't hire him, the consensus was somebody was going to hire him. There was a lot of, hey, they beat other teams to this guy.
This was not a out-of-left-field hire by the Tennessee Titans.
No, but as you read that resume, it does dawn on you he had neither been a head coach nor had he been a play caller at the NFL level. He hadn't done either one, and he's young. So he was going to try to do both for a team that was woefully undermanned, so that you had to be thinking all along, you've got to help this guy succeed if he's going to do both. But he's finding out the hard way, like maybe Vrabel did, but there's nothing wrong. These are two full-time jobs. And I think maybe as with the trend goes, the trend might cycle going the other way about the number of people that are hired to do the play calling and be the head coach. But I really do think that despite – and Adam, I think you're right. He was hired because he's an offensive mind, that he – you know, he's had a great tracker with quarterbacks. Hey, let's see if he can bring along our next quarterback, starting with Levis and now with Ward. But I don't think he has been demoted because he doesn't know offense. He's been demoted because he can't handle both jobs. And so you can't give up the head coaching job or else he's fired, right? So that was the only alternative, is to have him not call the plays. Which, as D-Mace just pointed out, is a perfectly legitimate, traditional way that teams have operated before. Be the head coach. If you want to sit on one side of the ball and help prepare the offensive game plan, that's fine. So that's what he's going with now. It's just a shame that it took this long to figure out that he's not cut out for both. And Paul's theory of too many cooks in the kitchen is an interesting one I hadn't thought of. He named five guys who are involved in the process of putting together the game plan. I didn't even heard of a couple of them.
It's probably more than that, honestly.
But he was talking about the guy who has red zone, coach. The guy that has the third downs, the guy that has the – and he's got an offensive coordinator that, I don't, you know, that he just – I guess he coordinates. Well, he doesn't do anything.
It's not unusual to have a bunch like people putting together the game plan because you have the running backs coach that's, you know, tasked to handle that. Then you got, you know, tight ends coach who combination with the offensive line coach, they put together a package and you all sort of put it together. It's just on game day. I think game day, there are too many people that had the ability to sway him one way or the other.
Yeah. I wonder if he's hearing, you know, if you're, let's say you're.
That may be the case. Like I'm not saying 100% it is.
Let's say this, you know, this has happened sometimes in a TV truck, mm-hmm. right? So I don't know if this is the case here, but let's say I'm focused on what's my next play, and maybe uh-huh. one of my other guys are saying, hey, it's third down. You got the third down package. What do we run on third down? And the guy in the booth is telling you, hey, are we going forward if it's fourth down? Like, these are all things that are happening.
Yeah.
And you've got 30 seconds, right? The play clock is running. Mm-hmm. I can see how indecision comes when you are in charge of the next play call and of a big, big game decision. So you're taking that off his plate. Hopefully it'll be better.
615-737-1025. We will take your reaction all show long to the news that Brian Callahan has ceded play calling responsibilities. What does it mean for him and the Titans now and in the immediate future? We will also take your reaction to Jarvis Brownlee being traded to the New York Jets in a late-round pick swap. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, Trevor Maddich will join us. We will ask him all of the questions that you are wondering about as well. And that's coming up next, 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Pleased to be joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by the one and only Trevor Maddich, who is brought to you each week by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Trevor, take me inside the mind of a player. A couple of weeks ago, I asked you if you were playing for Brian Callahan, I believe it was after the Denver game, if your faith would have been shaken by some of the coaching decisions that Callahan made in that game. But if you were on the Titans roster today, how would you be processing the news that Callahan is handing over play calling duties? And would it restore any of your faith in him as the leader of the team?
It would make things worse for me, and I would have to be fighting even harder to stay focused on the positive and stay focused on belief, even if that belief is artificial. Then I know it's artificial. I still have to go through my day with that belief where I've got no chance to be successful as a player or as a teammate. And it's I mean, when you look at it now, after what happened in the opener with that, the coach admitting that he didn't know the catch rule when Alec Iomanner had that amazing catch on the sideline. And, you know, the coach thought that it wasn't a catch, so he didn't throw the flag, the challenge flag, because he misinterpreted the rule. It's one thing if you don't know whether or not it was a catch or not based on the physical play. It's another thing if you don't know the rule. And then he admitted he didn't know the rule. And now things are worse because as a player, and this is just me talking now, and Derek might disagree with me on this, but as a player at this point, I see a head coach who's never been a head coach, who now has a record of 3-17, who just has had his duties diminished because he has been designated a failure as a play caller and needs to devote more time to the remedial aspects of being a head coach without the distraction of doing something that he hasn't proven he can do successfully anyway at this level, which is call plays. And I'm a player looking at that thinking we don't have a chance here because at this point the fruit is on the tree and the fruit is rotten and full of worms. Now, it's my job as a player to do everything I can to get that turned around, right? But I've got to wonder if I'm being put in the best position to win. And so that's the first thing I'm thinking is this coach, boy, is he having his duties diminished? Does that mean that he's on the way out the door? And if that's the case, what does it mean for me? And I've got to get through that and then reset my mindset to a positive mode to get ready for the next game. And that's an awful lot to ask because I'll tell you right now the possibility is that the head coach is going to be more of a distraction and more of a hassle as he bounces around without having to be distracted by play calling duties, trying to insert himself into other aspects of the team where he doesn't have the expertise to contribute very much. But there he is, because that's what he's supposed to do. So I'm interested to see what happens and what effect it has going forward.
Trevor, how would you feel right now if you were Cam Ward?
If I'm Cam Ward, I am fighting to not replay the movie in my head of people talking about how teams fail highly drafted quarterbacks more often than highly drafted quarterbacks fail teams. And I would have to fight off the perception that maybe I'm being failed by this team because of the way the play calling is going and the way that the offensive scheme is going. Are we really in the best position to be able to do things? Now, Cam can't entertain that thought, but he would have to be fighting that off and excluding that from his mindset over the course of preparation, and then just hope that the coaches are doing the very best that they could do, because this is his career. This is his career. Keep in mind that the average career is 3.5 years. And if you spend 2 years of that 3.5 with a coach or a coaching staff that is learning on the fly also, just like you are as a young player, all of a sudden half your career is kind of squandered before you even have a real chance to really totally flourish. Now, Cam's career is going to be a lot longer than that. But I think this all just sort of creates a cloud in the locker room. And the best teams believe in each other. They believe in the coach. They're on the same page. They're confident in everything they're asked to do. And they know that if something doesn't work, it's because we as players need to do something better. And the minute you start to get doubt saying, look, we could be the best we could possibly be, but the coach is holding us back, if that doubt is there, then you set up a scenario where the coach can lose the locker room. And far more than wins or losses, the perception of a coach losing the locker room is what leads to a firing.
We'll talk with Trevor Maddox discussing the Tennessee Titans' past weekend's loss and where do they go from here. Trevor, you are right about, you know, how you summed it up with what's going on with the Titans and what players are thinking. Because at this point, if I'm a player in that locker room, it's almost like dead man walking, because they stripped you of the one thing that you really got hired for in their minds. And now you're trying to find out, now they're trying to find out if you are truly a head coach. Veteran guys are going to still fight, but they understand that this is it for him. If he can't prove it now, he's going to be gone. So there's, and you're right, there's going to be, the story from here on out is going to be Brian Callahan, especially if they start losing. It will come up, if they lose to Houston, the next article will be, how long will Brian have his job? Do you think that's the case?
Oh, I think that'll be the total story. That'll absolutely be the story. And truth of it is, if they lose to Houston and go 0-4, why do you keep them there? Because the perception in the locker room, in my belief, would be that, okay, they have a coach that they hired, knowing they were going to have to develop him as a head coach because he's never been a head coach, develop him as a play caller because he's never been a play caller. All of a sudden now they're saying, okay, failed as a play caller. You're not doing that anymore. And as a head coach, he seems to be failing too. And so now we're dealing with, you know, the perception of a Cub Scout in here that's kind of in over his head a little bit. And whether that's fair or not doesn't really matter, because the fruit's on the tree, and until that fruit changes, then that's what people, I think, will be thinking. So that will be the story, and that will be the distraction. And so I agree with you, Derek, that, you know, it's not like a basketball team where if you got a couple guys that can shoot to three and then one big guy down low that can score in the paint against one-on-one, you know, if you don't have a lot of cohesion, that's, you can still win games. You know, the individuals can go do their thing. In football, individuals doing their thing is mildly interesting. In football, you have to have chemistry. You have to have belief in one another. Even if you don't like one another personally, you have to have football chemistry, and you have to believe that they're going to help you win and you're going to help them win. Then you can dislike each other off the field and away from the complex, you know, and that's fine. But I'm not saying that that exists in the Titans locker room. But what I'm saying is that in football, you have to have that cohesion, that chemistry, and that belief as a team. And if you don't have that, it makes it far more than any other sport that I'm aware of, very difficult to get the most out of the talent. And right now, just because of what's happening at the top, it's hard for me to imagine that there's a lot of belief.
Trevor Maddux is with us. Trevor, I want to go through what I think maybe was the tipping point of this decision, and that was the goof up at the end of the first half where they couldn't decide whether they wanted to kick it or go for it. They end up with the wrong ball because of the indecision, even after the timeouts, that whole debacle. Take me through what how you think it should go. Shouldn't the decision of whether you're going forward or not be made on third down? When it's third and two, don't you have to have the thought, somebody in the booth saying, Coach, are we going for it if we don't make it here?
Yeah, Willie, that decision should be made during the week. It should already be made. There should not be a decision-making process in the moment. If they get into a situation like that, because they should have gone through every imaginable scenario and written down what they're going to do. Talk to the analytics guys. What's the best way to go in this situation from an analytics standpoint? Then when the decision comes, the only thing they're doing is looking at the belief in the players. Are the players doing well? You know, are they moving the opponent off the ball enough to go for it on fourth and one right now? This kind of a thing. But it's a real quick decision because the main decisions have already been made. And that's part of the problem with this. I mean, the offense is on the field, the Bulls call timeout, and then the Titans call timeout, and then the offense is still on the field, and then the offense runs off, and the field goal team runs on, and then you see a close-up of the kicker, Joey Sly, looking over at the sideline saying, that's a quarterback ball. Because the kicker's ball is different from a quarterback ball, because kickers will take those balls and mess with them every kind of way to get them into a consistency that the kicker likes that the quarterback would never accept. But that makes it so they can kick it farther, and they can kick it straighter. They like that ball that way. But that's not up to the head coach to make the ball go in there. It's up to the head coach to make sure that the operation is with everybody on the same page so that when it's time for that to happen, everybody already knows, and the head coach doesn't have to go over there and personally inspect the football. And that means it's an undisciplined operation, at least in that moment.
Okay, so you made a great point that Brian Callahan, I'm sure part of his reluctance to do this was because he's now giving up the calling card. He was supposed to be the offensive guru, even though he's now saying, look, I'm still part of the process of the game plan. But my question to you, Trevor, is now that he can focus on the game ops and just be the head coach, which is how it's been done for 100 years, with a lot of teams anyway, do you think this can avoid these future basic goof-ups that have cost them?
Yeah, it might. I mean, it might. Maybe as a second-year head coach, some of these goof-ups are happening because he's so focused on the moment-to-moment duties of calling plays. And so that's possible, and this may elevate him as a head coach. He has to show that he can do that, and maybe he will. But this is where I talk about, you know, is he going to do more harm than good or more good than harm as he goes about those things as he's involved in other aspects of the team? Like, you know, the defensive coordinator, Denard Wilson, said that he was in the defensive meeting room, right? And okay, so here he is. Now, what are you going to do that's not going to cause problems more than it solves, right? I go back to when Steve Spurrier was the head coach for the Washington, now Commanders. One of the greatest college coaches of all time. He got to the Commanders, and I think, you know, as a new head coach, he did some things that I think he would choose to do differently. And in fairness to Coach Spurrier, he was working under an owner that we now know made it impossible for anybody to win. Just impossible. Steve Spurrier was in an impossible situation in Washington. But there came a time when there was so much pressure for Spurrier to go get involved with the defense and even the special teams because they were performing so badly that he just said to the press, yeah, I'm going to go in and I'm going to get more involved in the special teams. And I'm thinking, okay, is that good? You know, I mean, what does Steve Spurrier bring to special teams? And will he make it better or not? Or will he make it worse? I mean, I don't know, but if Brian Callahan is in there, well, he better not touch special teams. That's the one place that's going well. Mm-hmm. But if he goes over there with the defense and starts tweaking what they're doing or gets in the way or looking over people's shoulder, will that help? And so he now is in kind of a tricky position. He's going to be more involved as the head coach and without the play-calling burden. But at the same time, what does that mean for the improvement of the team? And ultimately, right now, he's not starting from scratch. He's starting from a deep, deep hole from a standpoint of the fruit on the tree, which so far, in every way imaginable, from an evaluation standpoint of a new head coach, that fruit is rotting and it's full of worms. And that's where he starts, and that's the hole he has to dig himself out of.
Trevor Maddich has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. He is brought to you each and every week by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Trevor, always a pleasure. We'll talk next week.
Hey, thanks, Adam. Thanks, guys.
Yep.
615-737-1025. We will continue to take your thoughts on Brian Callahan's decision today. But coming up next, right before we went on the air at 3 o'clock, the Tennessee Titans made a trade that seems to run counter to what the front office has been preaching for a while.
Yeah.
615-737-1025. We'll get into that next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.